in the spectrum of coolness.
Yeah. Oh, it's right up there. It's right next to Pilot.
Okay, so welcome to Astronaut to Zookeeper podcast, which is a podcast where I'm the art teacher formerly known as Miss Willis, and I'm on a mission to catch up with former students to see what career paths they have taken and what advice they would give their 14-year-old selves, all in the aim to open up the imagination when it comes to life after school. But to start this off, to do my pilot edition or my pilot episode, I'm going to start with somebody I know, my brother, which also works out quite well because it is an A to Z of careers, and he picked the A like I did, and he is an architect, so... I just thought that I probably should have done the pilot edition with a pilot. That could have worked really well. But anyway. So I am talking with my brother, who is Greg Willis, who is an architect, and we are going to chat more about that. But before then, I wanted to ask you, because when I was growing up with you, obviously, in my mind, you were always going to be an architect. That was, like, you knew this from the age of, like, 3 or something. But did you? And what, if not, what did you want to be when you were 5?
Oh, 3's early. I'm not sure if I knew from the age of 3. But I did. It's true that I did settle on wanting to be an architect for really early on. I think it's because... And a lot of architects will say this, it's a great combination between the arts and the sciences. And that's the kind of the answer you have to give when you're applying to universities.
Yeah.
But what I thought it would just be quite cool. Well, the thing is with architecture, you're designing buildings and you get used to buildings from an early age, if that makes sense. Everybody, you know, you live somewhere, you go to school, and so it's unlike other jobs. You kind of already know a little bit about it. So I think that's why I kind of like thought, well, yeah, this, I quite fancy designing a house or a school.
If you had to describe what an architect is to an alien life form, what would you say? So of its in its simplicity, without using jargon or, you know, words of the industry, how would you describe what it is you do?
Okay, so... I and we're using the royal we, design spaces and places. That's important. So we design internal rooms and we design outside spaces. And we do this for all different types of uses, functions, people, parts of the world. And the more varied, the more interesting it is to us. And a big part of it is interpreting a client, so the person who comes along, interpreting their brief, what they want, and making that reality. Mm-hmm. So it's a big part of it is a bit of detector, you know, working out and then solving a problem. And ultimately, it's about an idea in your head turning it into reality, either a space, an internal space, or a place, an external.
So a big part of it is the fact that it's not just you going around making these buildings and spaces, but there is somebody else involved. So this is the design part and the brief, and somebody saying, this is what we want you to do.
Yeah, it's massive. The client is massively important.
So what would you say, is there a common misconception about your job? So if you say to somebody, oh, I'm an architect, and then they immediately say something like, oh, where's your bow tie or something?
The misconception is that the architect is kind of like God and knows everything about everything. The reality is that we have the idea in our head that we've formed through listening to our client, and then we've got to be, you know, we've got to conduct it like in an orchestra, bringing the specialisms of all these different parts together into a whole. So yeah, the big misconception is that we know stuff and we don't. We just know how to put the jigsaw puzzle together.
What's the most common reaction then when people say, when you say to people you're an architect? Is there a next?
Yeah, no, it's always a good reaction, actually, because like I was saying earlier, people get it. You know, everybody uses buildings.
Okay.
So it's there's always a follow-up question, whether it's, oh, cool, have you designed your own house? Or, mm-hmm. oh, I've got an extension I'd like you to look at. Or what's your favourite building? You know, everybody's got an opinion on it.
Okay. But it's do you think in the spectrum of coolness?
Yeah. Oh, it's right up there. It's right next to Pilot.
So this section is called The Good, The Bad and The Average. And so this is thinking about your days at work. They're not all going to be the same. So just to divide them up. So the first one, if you could describe, it doesn't have to be a whole day, but or a time when you thought, I have the best job in the world.
Okay, so as I said earlier, we get to do... as an architect, unless you're really specialist, you get to do different types of stuff. So, and in different places. So one of the things that I've really enjoyed is that I've been doing some projects in India, in Mumbai in particular. And one of my clients over there, got to do their house for a series of fortunate events. And that's quite incredible. We don't normally do houses, we tend to do bigger stuff, but this was a big house. So I remember one day in particular when we were developing the brief with the client, so asking questions about exactly what they wanted, and the client said, well, look, I really want to show you the gardens in my country house outside of Mumbai. And I said, great, love to see that. So she said, okay, meet me at the race course. So in the middle of Mumbai, there's a race course. So early in the morning, me and a couple of others from the design team, we drove down to the race course, or driven down to the race course, and then the car just carried on driving into the middle of the race course. So, it's like going to Ascot and allowing the car to drive in the middle. The horses had to stop. They were practicing and all that stuff. We drove in the middle, and then we met the client there, and I was like, well, what's going on? And then a helicopter landed. So now I'm thinking,
nice.
Okay, cool. So we got in the helicopter and then we were flown to their private residence outside of Mumbai, which was an old Maharaja's palace, which they'd had converted. So we had a great day there looking around, had a lovely lunch. And then the client said, I've got to go now, but you guys stay. I'll leave you my private chef.
Nice.
So we stayed in the Maharaja's palace with the private chef.
Yeah. And a helicopter.
So that was
outside.
A good day. No, she took the helicopter. We had to drive back.
Oh no!
It was 40 minutes by helicopter, 4 hours to drive back the next day. We had a car. But so that was a cool day.
And so I guess the same sort of question, but where you've really, really struggled and potentially even thought about giving it all up and thought, why am I doing this job? This is really difficult.
In one day, I had a meeting that didn't go very well. And as I was presenting, the client was banging tables and shouting and swearing at me. Mm. And it wasn't my fault at all. It was, wasn't given the information from somebody else. And I was gently trying to remind them on that, but it's not nice to be shouted at and sworn at. But, we were all made up at the end of it. It was all fine. Then I got back to the office and there was a problem on site with another one of the buildings and something had gone wrong and the contractor was trying to get out of it. And so you have to ring people up and not in a nasty way, but remind them of their responsibilities under the contract, and that's tense when dealing with conflict.
Absolutely.
And then also then again in the same day I had to tell another client that they hadn't paid their bills and I wasn't going to do their work. So it's dealing with conflict sometimes, and you kind of think, well, my entire day was just dealing with people and conflict. And actually, I thought that this is so far removed from me doing cool drawings and, designing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's those days that you're just like, ugh.
Mm-hmm. So we've heard the highs and the lows. Could you give us a bit of a taster of what your kind of average day is? So, you know, what's a Monday like for Greg Willis in Make Architects? what would you...
Yeah.
You know, are you always in the office once a week? Are you out on site? What's average for you?
A normal day, I'm probably in the office or in the studio. I will tend to get in quite promptly, although people will be here from anywhere between 8, half 9, 10. There isn't a 9 o'clock, everybody's in the door, but I like to be in a little bit earlier. So come in, coffee, read emails, catch up on the emails that I've got over the weekend. Unfortunately, that happens. Then we'll sit down as a team. We'll share some breakfast, actually. We try and do that once a week on a Monday, which is kind of nice. And we'll work out the different projects that we've all got, who needs help and who needs support and what have you. And then there'll be a lot of it is, you know, at the desk doing work. Or at somebody else's desk. Somebody's got a problem, solving a problem. So there'll be, you know, 50-50 of drawing on CAD and 50% of time, you know, sketching, talking to people, ringing up consultants, working out how problems could be changed.
The nitty-gritty. So here's some questions that perhaps aren't your standard questions, but this one was actually from your son.
Okay.
So Ben came up with this as a question. What would you have to do to get fired from your job?
That's a really good one, isn't it? I think something that's maybe particular to this one, to where we work, is that we're really hot on plagiarism, actually. And that sounds really funny. But we
don't describe what that is.
Well, yeah, so plagiarism is taking somebody else's idea and using it and passing it off as your own. So the ethos of the company is that people get rewarded for their stuff, for their contributions, and so therefore it shouldn't be the case that somebody does all the work and somebody else takes the credit for it. You know, that is not the case with this firm, hence why, you know, for very simple things, like that's why the firm isn't called on apart like somebody's name like other architects firms.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay.
And so we are quite hot on plagiarism, and there was one, you know, I won't go into detail, but where there was a bit of copying. There's not copying in the workplace, it was to do with some exams and stuff, but that really got that, you know, that's really frowned upon. You know, you've got to give people credit for the work that they do. You know, everybody takes influence and is inspired by stuff, but you know, it's taken a really dim view if you are deliberately taking credit for somebody else's work.
Money question. People would be... Obviously, it's considered to be a good job to have, to be an architect. But what's the sort of starting salary of an architect? Obviously, there's lots of training involved.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, straight out of uni, you got your qualifications, what's the sort of starting salary?
Yeah.
Would you say? Obviously, it's dependent on where you are.
Yeah,
so London
yeah,
would
totally,
be different.
Totally. So I'm talking London now. So just so you know, architecture, you'll do... unless you do it somewhere like abroad or in Scotland, in the UK, you'll do 3 years at university. You'll then do a year's work experience in industry. Then you'll do 2 more years at university. Then you do another year's work experience. And then you do your final exams. So those 2 bits of work experience, you're looking... you've got a degree, but you're not fully qualified as an architect. So you'd be looking to get in your 20s, so in your upwards of 20,000.
Okay.
Once you've gone through all of your, once you've gone through all of your exams and you're fully qualified, but you won't have had experience in running jobs and things like that. So a newly qualified one, you'll be in your 30s.
Okay.
So that's broadly it, and then it changes hugely, depends on your experience. So some people have come here and they've had, they haven't actually gone back to university to finish their studies, but they've got years of experience. Mm-hmm. So obviously they're not going to stay in a certain bracket. So experience is everything.
Experience is key when it comes to you.
But after university in your 20s, fully qualified,
okay,
30s upwards.
Good. A central question here, what do you wear to work, Greg?
Well, so I'm wearing some kind of chino, green chino-y type things, brown brogues. I mean, this is the uniform of a middle-aged man, isn't it? A pink shirt and a grey jumper. I would say I'm probably more smartly dressed than the average person in the studio. If you looked around, there's t-shirts, jeans, what have you.
So there's no real dress code?
There is no
family?
No. There's a couple of years back, our boss scrapped all of what he called the old fart rules in our manifesto, or whatever you call it, which did state at the time that you couldn't wear shorts, have visible tattoos, or I think there was one others. Was it flip-flops? Anyway, he scrapped all of that. So
as he walked in shorts,
yeah,
flip-flops,
shorts,
and a new tattoo.
Flip-flops, and exposed all the tattoos the next day. But yeah, no, it's relaxed. But at the same time, there are people here that spend most of their time in the studio, in which case, you know, you've got to wear, you know, appropriately. But there are some people here that will spend more time seeing clients. And so you've got to pitch it to what your client is wearing and stuff like that.
So final section then, sort of tips and tricks. So if anyone listening to this is thinking, oh, I'd quite like to be an architect, what sort of things, if they're still in school, what should they pay attention to? Or if they're choosing subjects, is it a case of there is a correct subject to choose, or are there other things to pay attention to at the ages of sort of 12, 13, 14.
If you want to do architecture, have a good mixture of sciences and arts. I would say, though, whatever you do, you will have to present a portfolio of work to both the university and to employers. So the most important thing is the portfolio. Mm. Now, you don't have to, therefore, do art, but you do have to present a portfolio. And don't be fooled into thinking that that's going to be technical either. You learn that at university. What we want to see is creativity. So, you know, it's kind of exploration in pure art.
So if I came along with a portfolio and it had things like origami and
clay
sculptures, and say,
absolutely.
So it's exploring an idea visually.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So all of that. But then, you know, you do need a type of brain which can solve three-dimensional problems and have a, you know, basic knowledge of physics, I think, you know, about how things stand up and how things get constructed, you know, put on top of each other. And so, you know, physics is good and maths is good. And then actually, I although I changed, I really did enjoy history, because I think the thing that history taught me was about storytelling. And actually, that's been really, really useful, because at the end of the day, when you're trying to convince a client to invest in you and to spend their millions of pounds on your scheme, you've got to be a really good salesperson.
Mm.
So the ability to tell a story in words and over a conversation and convince somebody that that's the right story is really important.
Before I go on to the last question, so penultimate question. So obviously you've spoken about what subjects potentially good at school and sort of the qualities and skills that would be beneficial. Are there any other kind of tips that you would give somebody? I don't know, starting a new hobby or join a certain club or something else which would be a point of difference if there are 10 architects that have all got the same qualifications vying for for the position in your company? Yeah. Is there something else?
Absolutely. I think we're interested in just people who are fascinated about the built environment. I mean, you know, and so the built environment covers so much. You know, it covers sustainability, it covers resources, it covers how we live, how we, you know, relate to individual other peoples, how groups come together. So just have passion about people and how people dwell, live, work, play, what have you. Mm-hmm. And that might be, you know, going off to Africa and building some temporary things, or that might be, you know, really being interested in energy and how we can be more sustainable through the use of different materials. It might have an attitude to having a scientific, you know, knowledge of materials, you know, being really kind of just up on the latest
geology
things. Yeah, geology, or about how seaweed can be, algae can be used in buildings is a big thing at the moment. And, you know, or it might be, actually, do you know what, I'm an architect, but I'm also really like making wood cabinets. You know, that's fantastic because it shows a level of care and things. So it's anything that can plug in to that kind of creative problem solving thing, but also something that looks at the bigger agenda, because, you know, that buildings are costly, they you know, absorb huge amounts of energy, they cause massive problems, but they can also be the solution to so many of life's ills. Mm-hmm. So just have an interest.
So finally, Greg, what advice would you give your 14-year-old self?
I think we fall into traps, don't we, that thinking that a job is a certain type of thing, and so therefore you need to tick boxes. So and I would say you don't need to tick boxes. In actual fact, you've got to think differently.
Mm-hmm. There is no box.
Yeah, exactly, to stand out. So an example of this would be, I was mentoring somebody who was doing their portfolio to submit because he wanted to go to architecture school, and he was preparing some questions that he thought that he knew he was going to be asked at university, I think. And one of them, I think, was he thought he was going to be asked, or they probably were going to ask him, was, what's your favourite building and why? And he kind of like got all of these very architectural buildings that I don't think he'd even been to, but he thought they were the right answer.
Yeah.
You know, the latest thing or what have you. And I said, well, do you like those buildings? And he said, well, yeah. Well, why? And he's like, well, because it looks good and stuff like that. I said, well, if I was to ask you a different thing, what building do you feel gives you the biggest buzz? And he said, well, actually, he was a Crystal Palace fan, so it was the stadium at Crystal Palace. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, say that. And he said, yeah, but it's a rubbish building. It looks awful. It's dated and stuff. Yeah, but what's it like when you're in there and the crowd roar? And he said, it's amazing. It's electric. And I said, well, say that. That's the point.
Mm-hmm.
So don't... anyway, he didn't get into architecture school, but... No, I'm joking. He did. But that's the point. It's don't... If somebody says it's about this, then do something different, because it's almost definitely not. You know, genuinely follow the things you're interested in and see how that can be shaped, rather than try and shape some idea of what you think architecture is about into you, or right. Any other profession, I think.
Right. Well, that's it. That's the end of our first episode of Astronaut to Zookeeper podcast. Huge thanks to my brother Greg for sitting down with his little sister and having a chat with me all about what it's like to be an architect. If you were listening and thinking, oh, okay, I'm kind of interested in that career maybe, then do head on over to our Instagram account, which is @AstroZookeeper. And Greg has given us his follow-up 3 pieces of advice. So do check those out. And of course, thank you to you for listening. We'll be back soon with more.